Hi, everyone. Welcome back to The Restaurant Innovator, a podcast from the editors of FSR Magazine that features conversations with trailblazing chefs, restaurateurs, tech innovators, and other folks in the food service world who are leading the charge in creating elevated experiences for modern guests and employees alike. I'm your host and FSR editor, Callie Evergreen, joined by my colleague and co-host, Sam Danley, associate editor. I'm excited to introduce you to our special guest on today's episode, Chef Grégoire Jacquet, a French-trained chef and founder of Grégoire, a fine fast casual restaurant concept. Chef, thank you so much for joining us. Can you start off by introducing yourself and your journey to joining the culinary world?
Yeah, hi. First of all, thank you for having me around. You know, it's always a pleasure to be part of your podcast. My name is Grégoire Jacquet, and I am a French citizen. I grew up in the Loire Valley, and for the most part of my youth, spent it in my mom's kitchen. That's where my love of cooking started. Do you want to know particularly what my route was, or anything?
Sure, let's get into it. Yeah.
So I started really cooking at 14. I went to a local cooking school just because I was not such a nice kid and no other school wanted me around. So we decided to put me in a local cooking school. Now, it was a very special school because I was doing 2 weeks cooking and then 1 week school that allowed me to really got into the world of cooking and really learning and appreciating teamwork and I did a lot of different type of cooking. I did farm cooking. I like using product from the farm. I did collectivity. I did fine dining restaurant, and that basically where I landed my focus. That's where really I liked the cooking style. So to make it shorter, I started my journey in the real world in Paris, where I cooked for a restaurant in next to Bourse, which is the Wall Street equivalent in Paris. So we had all those big wigs and big money spender, and this restaurant was a high finding, really fine dining restaurants, but the wait staff was American, so that was my first like view of America, and I decided to take a vacation in the U.S. So I came straight down to San Francisco, where I spent about 2-3 weeks, and I actually talked to a couple of chefs, and one of them, a French master chef, talked to me for quite a while and said, if you do the paperwork, then you got a job here. So I did. I applied for a visa, and I landed to San Francisco, a restaurant named Amelio's that was run by this chef, Jackie Robert, was very, 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 very good chef, French master chef. There's not so many master chef in the world. There's about 500 of them, and he was one of them. And I worked for him for about 4 or 5 years, and learned so much about fine dining, of course, but managing. Because I started as just a little cook in the garde-manger side of it, and then I moved my way up between, like in 2 years, I was in charge of the kitchen, the whole thing. My English was not that good, so I had to really work hard to get, you know, my way in Fringlish. After 5 years of fine dining, my focus had moved away a bit, just because being French and being trained in France, you don't regard coworkers and people around you the same that you view them here in America. And I thought it was a very important part of running a business. It was really learning to deal with others. So I asked my boss to find me a job in more of a management position in one of the best chain in the world, which was the Ritz-Carlton in San Francisco. He had an affinity with the chef there. So I waited about 6 months. And after 6 months, he got me a job as a banquet chef. That was a really, really, really good opportunity for me because I did no banquet. And I took my learning in fine dining and brought it to the banquet at the Ritz-Carlton San Francisco. And that was really fantastic. Not only for the Ritz, but for myself, because, you know, when you're a cook, when you're a chef, when you're on your business, you don't know much about quantity. You know about small quantity, but you don't know about big quantity. And my job at the Ritz was also taking care of all those guest chefs like Thomas Keller, Tracy Desjardins, that would come to the Ritz and cook for like galas for a lot of people. And I was there to help them organize themselves with their dish to, you know, make sure it would end up in, you know, the way they wanted it to be, which is not always the same as fine dining. So that was really, really an awesome experience for me. And then I grow a lot at the Ritz. They like me, they like my style. So I went from one Ritz to another, moved a lot. You know, I worked at the Ritz-Carlton, Boston, I opened some Ritz-Carlton, I opened Ritz-Carlton Bali, I opened Ritz-Carlton Jamaica. I opened some clubs from the Ritz-Carlton clubs too, because they had clubs at this point. And then I settled to a job in Puerto Rico, where they asked me to go and restructure the kitchen there. 85 employees, 6 restaurants, a casino. It was a pretty big job. And my wife and I stayed there for, it was about a year when we decided that, you know, we needed to build a family. And we wanted to go back to the U.S. And so I asked them to move me back, and they were not kind of keen on moving me back because they said my job was not finished there and I needed to do more. But in my head, my job was done, and I, you know, I wanted to do something else. 7 years of Ritz-Carlton, you know. So I moved myself back to Berkeley, where we had a home. Before we left to Puerto Rico, so we moved back in our house and you know, let's try to think and brainstorm what we were going to be doing. I always work with people or for someone else, other employers. So I never thought I was going to open a business. Really, to tell you the truth, I just was not excited about opening my own business. Never. Since the beginning, I was very comfortable having a paycheck every month and knowing that I had a job. But this all, you know, kind of shook things around, and the only thing I could do or wanted to do is just open a little business next to my home, where I know my neighborhood, where I knew people, where I felt comfortable, you know, going, walking to my restaurant, you know, every day. But the decision was hard because I knew what I wanted. I wanted good food. But I didn't want a dining room. I didn't want the experience of having people sitting down. And I wanted food available every day. That was my big thing, because every day, all day. I'm a chef, and we always work in odd hours. And when you get off work, you want to try to find good food, and it's just not available because the restaurant is closed at 2, they open at 5. And I mean, all those chefs, the only thing they wanted to do is, you know, put food in a plate. So, I mean, they have to go home, they have to close, this is the way to go. So my restaurant was not going to be like this at all. It had to be available all the time. And by looking, we found that little place next to to our home, and it's in the Gourmet Ghetto. It's very conveniently put in. It's around the corner from Chez Panis, Alice Water restaurant. So it's kind of the foodie area of Berkeley. So we just took the lease over. I mean, it was no one there. It was just in very bad shape. But we had I didn't have the vision. My wife had the vision that a restaurant would work there. And I mean, I follow her vision and we opened in 2002. So 21 years ago, it was 600 square foot, little walk-in restaurants, no dining room, just a few tables outside and, three stools inside where I was the star. And it was a cashier and I had hired a part-time cook so I could take a break during the day. But I was there from 9 to 9 at night, 9:30 at night. And we'd take a break with my wife coming with the kids because I had one baby, at the time. So he was 3 months old. So I opened Gregoire and the baby together. That was basically, you know, in a nutshell, my whole life up to Gregoire Point.
Yeah. Kind of going back to the early days of Gregoire, what inspired you to take that entrepreneurial leap? And what was the experience like kind of transitioning from the upscale fine dining environment to now opening and running your own restaurant?
Two questions. And the first one, what made me take the leap? Well, working for people, it's nice. It's very secure in some way. But with what happened with the Ritz and the way we separated, and I had a lot of communication with corporate and they had a vision for me that was not my vision. And I think all the bricks were together, aligned in order to build something, because I had a lot of fine dining experience. I had a lot of managerial experience that I had gathered at the Ritz. I mean, lots of number, lots of data, lots of, I was in charge of hiring and firing employees, you know, so I knew what to really the HR part of running a business, which is super important. So I think all were aligned. So I was comfortable, you know, making the jump. And of course, it's the unknown, but the unknown was my unknown. It was not someone else's unknown. So I felt good. I had the support of my wife and my family because it's always needed. Because, you know, building a business is a lot of work. Even though we had a brand new baby, I felt like my wife was really my rock, and I could not have done that without her. I mean, even though she stayed home every night, you know, she decided that she was starting cooking, and so she cooked. So I had a meal at night, and it was just really, really a good place. Also, something I felt good about was the fact that the business we had created was not depending on other people or other things. It was just depending on me. Like, I mean, when you do a fine dining restaurant, there is so many moving factor. There is so many things. And for instance, something that always troubled me in America and in fine dining in general, even in France, it's the same. We are always dependent on reviews, on food critics, on customers' satisfaction, on I mean, if you get a bad review the first day of your business, is, I mean, I give you 5 years, and then, or even 1 to 5 years, and then you're out. Yeah, and that's terrible, because I mean, some businesses are really, really, really good and deserve way more than they get, but because of the decision of one person and only one, everything is going to, you know, just fall apart. And for me, was I wanted a business that was completely food critic proof. Like, well, you can report that I do good food, but I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't pretend, you know. So you can't break my business, because I don't need you, basically. You know, the people can make their choices by themselves. They don't need you. So as of today, you know, I have reviews, but I don't really, you know, I mean, I don't really count on them. So that's one part of why I did that. And then the other question was, help me out.
Yeah. What was that experience like? You know, starting your own business and kind of learning how to manage a restaurant that you owned yourself.
I was very confident, because I had a lot of experience.
Yeah.
You know, I was running kitchen. I was around 30 years old then. I was running kitchen since I was 20. I was dealing with people, customer, vendors. I mean, everything since 20 years old, hiring and picking and just training, and the whole thing was 10 years of doing this. So I was very comfortable. And then when I opened, I had only two people. So it was just me and two people. Really easy to train. And it's a small kitchen, 500 square feet. So you can see everything. You can really manage everything. We had a bit of accounting to do, which was not my favorite. Putting invoice and stuff. I was doing it until I hired somebody else to do it. But I had an accountant. That was very important. My first thing was an accountant, just because I'm good with numbers, but you know, you have to organize your business in a way that it's good on all ends. But I felt really comfortable, and it was very easy for me. It was very rewarding. It was no roadblocks.
How would you describe the culinary approach? I know you've got a rotating menu, a focus on local ingredients, kind of that gourmet twist with your fine dining background. Give us a sense of the type of food that you guys are serving up to guests.
So, I mean, since day one, the menu evolved a lot. We used to do menu change every month, and you know, I was young and ambitious, and it was fun. But as you get older, you get smarter, and I'm focusing more on the franchise part. So I really I tailored my business for the franchise aspect of it. Not that we won't veer or do experimental other stuff, but I've done a lot of things the last 20 years. I mean, we experienced with dinner, we experienced with breakfast, I've catering down like I mean, we do catering, our eyes closed. It's super easy and organized. So we've done a lot of things. So I did have a lot of relationship with local vendors with my years in the Bay Area. So I had all the vendors set. I've been doing business with my farmer for the last 20 years, but I knew my farmer way before at other restaurants. Actually, I used to deal with his mom before, and now I deal with the son. So it's the second generation of farmer. It's the same with my meat provider. It's the same with, you know, I have a relationship, and I count on those relationships to get the best product at the best price, you know. So that helped a lot.
And then can you walk us through this hub to store kitchen model that you created? You know, how does that kind of work? How did you conceptualize and implement that approach?
Well, it's not new. I mean, a lot of people do it and at a certain extent. I mean, McDonald's does it in a major way, but so I'm new at franchising. I'm new at learning about franchising, just because all my years growing up, franchising was just not something I was interested in. Because franchising for me in France, it's McDonald's, it's all those, you know, place you don't, I was not really fond of, or I didn't really understand what franchising was. You know, it was just an association with something I didn't want to be associated with. Gregoire was not going to franchise, period. I was going to grow it by myself, but no franchise. But by learning about franchising, and I understood that franchising was not just something. It was really all about systems and all about putting systems together in order to duplicate something. So when you look at this way, I looked at my business and I said, okay, fine, that's what we do. And if I want a franchise, am I going to have to compromise what we do now? And if I don't have to compromise, how am I going to do it to scale that thing? And I looked at what are the pain points of the business and tried to eliminate those pain points in some way or another. One of the pain points, it's not a pain point, but it's something that's hard to do in my business. It is vetting product and preparing product, because we use product that are expensive and we don't want any waste. And you have to know your product, because things come in many ways and shapes, and vendors sometimes don't understand fluctuation in product. Even sometimes farmers don't understand fluctuation in product, and they have to have us to tell them, well, this is not good. You need to grow it more. You need to, you know, water it more, or you need to do something because it's not right. So, and then there's the creation of product, you know, preparations of things. We use French techniques, so we use culinary techniques that are hard to learn sometimes. And that's why we have Eileen Paychef that went to school, that went to processes, that understand those techniques. And when it comes to one franchise, it's very expensive to operate, to have a chef in every franchise to cook and to create and to put together a new menu. And so it becomes expensive. But looking at the whole system, I thought that having this central kitchen, having all the preparation done, all the bread, all the sauces and portion, and having all the hard stuff done at one location and deliver fresh every day to each restaurant was just the way to go in order to really not compromise on quality. Then go ahead.
I was going to ask how this hub to store model has contributed to the success and reliability of the catering services, because that's a pretty significant part of the business now too, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you think about it, when a catering comes, I mean, we do at Gregoire, we do catering up to 550 people. And that's because sometimes our transportation can't put more than that. But if we had a bigger transportation, we would do it. It's all about organization. You know, and it starts with organizing the way you deal with the customers, you know, and what stuff they can have at this such a large scale, because sometimes, you know, there's some things they can or cannot have. And then it goes on by ordering the stuff, you know, making sure you have, it's not just, oh, well, I need a 200 fried chicken sandwich. Well, I'm going to get 3 cases. No. It doesn't work this way. You need to know weigh or size or number per case. And you have to, know how long time it takes you to prepare something, how much to prepare. And so it's something you need to learn, really. It's something even I had to teach that to my chefs, because they don't understand size and volume the way I do. When it comes to the franchisee, how hard would that be? Very hard. So we make it so easy that, you know, if they have a catering of 100, 200 people the next day, the night before, they just say, we need enough product to build 200 chicken sandwich. And so we will deliver enough for 200 chicken sandwich on top of whatever par they have for the day coming. Because, I mean, every day is pretty much the same from one day to another, 1 week to another, depending on weather, depending on, you know, what's happening in the city, you pretty much know what you need. So they'll have a par in the app and it'll be easy to order after the inventory at night. They say, well, we need that for the next morning. Plus, you know, this 200 fried chicken sandwiches for this special event. So, and then it comes, they'll prepare, put it, I mean, finish it up, you know, put it in the box and then deliver. So pretty easy.
And can you talk about scaling your team to be able to follow through and accomplish this, like operations wise? How big is your team now? How many people are in that kitchen preparing?
See, that's another thing that I really learned throughout my career. And it's not something that is done in France at all. And it's something I learned here in America with my French chef, Jackie Robert. We promote within, period. We look for talent inside our organization. And that's since I started working at Amelios. I have stories. We would hire dishwasher as pastry chefs in a fine dining restaurant, you know, and it's not because the lack of staff that wanted to work at Amelios. No way. I mean, it was such a high end restaurant. Everyone wanted to work for free over there. But no, because of the interest that the dishwasher had in that department. And I mean, he would really, and to this day, I mean, we put him as a pastry chef. To this day, he's still a pastry chef in San Francisco in a large hotel, the airport hotel. So he's a pastry chef for the whole thing. So it's rewarding. I do the same ever since that time with Jackie. I look for talent within the Ritz-Carlton, look for talent within my organization. When I actually hire people and I talk to them, I always ask them their short goal, if they have a short goal or a long goal term, and just for me to know what they want in the next future. And then I always look at them as a potential executive chef, a potential salesperson, a potential anything that could help me in the organization. Right now, we have about 9 people that work at Gregoire, and it's already decided who's going to do what in when we have our first franchise. We're looking for a kitchen, so I know who's going to run the kitchen, the central kitchen. I know who's going to run the Gregoire in Berkeley. So everything is really under control. Yeah. I groom them for that too.
What are some of the challenges you've encountered as you embarked on this journey? You mentioned, you know, you're new to the franchise world. Are there any kind of big lessons or like surprising things you've encountered that you might share with others who are looking to expand their restaurant via franchising?
It's expensive. It's not new. I knew it from the get-go. But it is, you know, it takes a lot of time and a lot of, it really is a commitment. When I started franchising, with another concept out of Washington, and we got together just because we were starting. And I think they're not following through their plan just because they didn't think it was going to be that hard or that difficult. I knew, I listened to a lot of podcasts. I talked to a lot of people. I before I do anything, I take my time. That's one thing. I take more time than anyone else probably. But I would say be patient. Patience and have a big wallet. That's my thing. And I mean, learn, because you don't want any surprises. You know, there is enough surprises coming your way. So if you know what's coming, at least, you know, surround yourself with people that are willing to help and that are that are here, not just, oh, I'll help you. No, people that really will support you and will, you know, help you.
And can you talk about the timeline then for franchising? I know you're kind of focusing on the Bay Area in this next year, 2024.
Yes. So that's one thing I like I say, I like to grow slow. I want to make sure my franchisee are profitable, but most of all, I want to make sure, and I know because I've run many kitchens, you know, at the Ritz, I run 6 restaurants at the same time. So I know how to run many, many departments, but I just want to make sure that all the systems are in place, you know, to not only support, but be there for the franchisee. You know, I mean, we're going to do all the food. So I need to make sure everything is organized around delivery. Everything is organized around support. Everything is organized around how we run that department, the kitchen, the culinary hub. We're going to be really involved with the franchisee. See, that's one thing that, you know, I sometimes regret in franchising is that you get the franchisee, you train them, you open their shop, and then you let them fly. And, well, maybe a phone call here, a visit there, a mystery shopper here, and a phone call there. Yeah, I mean, not with us, you know. We'll be 2 hours away from any franchise, and they can come to the culinary hub. They can have, you know, visit. We can go there. We'll have someone from the culinary hub at their shop delivering food every day, you know, so they'll have that person will be trained to see and look and help. And, you know, it's not going to be just your good old delivery guy, you know, he'll be a friend, you know, he'll be someone that's here to help your business, you know, because we'll be really linked together as we make the food, you finish the food, and you take care of the customer. So that's really, it's going to be a good process.
And as you're looking at potential franchisees, are you, you know, do you have someone on your team already who will be in charge of, you know, franchise sales and figuring out development?
Yes. So I have a team of people that that is doing development, that talks to all the leads, that talk to all the potential franchisee. So right now we have about 3 FDDs out. And we have about another 3 people we're talking to, really good potential in the Bay Area. So, it's some of them want more, some of them are multi. So, but like I said, no, I want to take my time and make sure they're the right people. I'm an easy guy to get along with, but I want to make sure that they're easy to get along with me.
And too many operators and franchisors I've seen make the mistake of going too quickly, and that hurts you more than going slowly. That's for sure.
No, yeah, I have stopped communication with some because I knew it was not going to work. Whether it's personality, whether it's mostly personality, you know, and the way they think about what they will do or what they want to do. I'm not even going further than, you know, sending them an FDD. I'm just not interested.
And then is your ultimate goal, you know, to kind of build out, this franchise base in California and then take it to more states? Do you have like an ultimate number goal in mind or anything like that? I know you're taking it slowly, but. Anything?
Yeah, I mean, of course, my dream is to have Gregoires in every city in America, and I want to go to France. That's, you know, something I want to be able to do just because they have the same problem we have here in when it comes to franchising. You know, it's a lot of preconceived idea around franchising. But to answer your first question, that was how am I going to do, and do I have any market that are planned? You know, the progression of the Bay Area down to what's next would be Los Angeles, just because, you know, if I can make it in the Bay Area, then it's easy for me to go to LA. Plus it's close by, and I I know the product there. I have tie there. I know people. But there is also a market that of interest that have came forward, like Austin. I've been the Texas, some other part, like Houston, Texas. I have some people in Montana, but I don't think Montana is big enough state for me. It needs to be, what we do go slow here. I want to see how many restaurant one culinary hub can start without breaking the bank of the franchisee, because ultimately we're all gonna, you know, they're all gonna pay for the service, because it is a service. I want to see what is the break-even part on how many franchises a culinary hub can start with, and then I'll go to a market and open the market and make sure I have that many franchisees in order to open an hub that you know would be that would make sense for all of us. also, the good thing having different market is that, and changing the menu quite often, like seasonally, like we do, is that you can really analyze your market and analyze your customer and give your customer what they want. Often enough, franchises are geared to a certain type of customers, and they're not really, they're just geared to those customers. And, I don't want to be this way. I want to really listen to what they want and give them what they want. So for instance, here in the Bay Area, they like certain things, and in Texas, they might like more meat or more barbecue stuff. And so we will tailor the menu to the market we're into. I mean, New York will be very different, you know, from the Bay Area. So, and LA can even be different from the Bay Area. So it's, you know, if you hire the right people in the culinary hub, chefs that have experience and that know their market, because ultimately this is what I have to do. I have to hire local people to run local restaurants, you know, and it would be the same for the chef. You are your local chef that knows, you know, product, that knows market, and you pay them well enough to create menus based on Gregoire's, you know, philosophy, and then you offer it to the customers, you know. So that's our idea.
And how would you then describe that philosophy that will carry over as you scale?
We care about the people. You know, we care about the people. I mean, we want to be happy doing it, and that's why we change the menu often. So we have, we're not bored, and we're not, you know, we're professionals. So we like to create, and we can create a lot of food that tastes good. But we're a people franchise. You know, we love people. We love to feed them good. We love to feed them healthy. You know, because healthy starts with the product. You know, the way you cook it. Well, it can be healthy or not healthy, you know. I mean, yeah, if you eat too much fried food, yeah, you know, you might have a problem. But, you know, too many times, the product that are put out there they're just not good. I mean, you think about it. When you buy sliced meat, you know, in your supermarket, they spread it with chemical. Every sliced meat is spread with chemical, and that's the law. They have to do it, you know. But if you buy a ham, a whole ham that you slice yourself, you don't need chemical. There is no chemical. You'd have to buy a good product, but you don't need that. You know, so you need to know all these little things that make your product really sane and really good. So all the stuff that you put in your mouth doesn't go into your body and just hurt you in the long run. So we care for our customers. We want to give them good food, fresh food, because we don't freeze anything. We do everything in-house. And we want to tailor food for them, you know? So.
Kind of wrapping up here, you know, if you look back at the past 20 years growing this concept and your career before that as well, Are there any, you know, final thoughts, like words of wisdom or pieces of advice you would share with someone who's just getting started in the restaurant industry, trying to make their mark on the food and beverage landscape?
Wow, that's a loaded question. But, you know, I mean, for me, you have to do what you really want to do, whether it's be a lawyer, a dentist, a doctor, a farmer. I mean, I love to cook, and I've been wanting to cook since I'm 6 years old. I've been cooking since I'm 6 years old. I don't think there is anything else I'd rather do than cooking. And cooking is just not cooking and creating and doing. Cooking is a whole philosophy. You know, you have to, it's just finding the product. I love going to markets. I love shopping. Even you send me to the Safeway, you know, I enjoy the action of finding things and looking at things and then it's creating, and then it's giving, you know, and then it's the reward is there when the people are. So it's taking, giving, taking back from the people without them knowing, they give you back. And I think here, I think sometimes people are scared of making the move to do whatever they want to do just because they are comfortable of doing what they are doing. And this is the way I felt when I was working for someone like the Ritz that would pay me a lot of money. I say a lot of money to do a job that I was comfortable with, but not super happy about, of course. And then making the switch to open my own business, it was a tough decision, but I it's so rewarding. It's so, I mean, people have said it before, you know, I'm not the new guy on the blog that broke the news, but it is something you don't be scared. Don't be scared, you know? And well, it doesn't work. It's okay. Sometimes it doesn't. And then you just try again or go back to your old ways. It's okay. It's totally fine. Forgive yourself, you know? That's just forgive yourself and move on.
Well said. Well, you know, if there are any listeners out there who want to learn more about you, your concept, the franchising opportunity, is there a good website or email you can send them to?
So in order to, you know, get a franchise, first of all, you're going to have to learn about the franchise because you can't do something without falling in love with it and caring for what you're doing. So first you can go on my website. It's gregoirerestaurant.com and, is GREGOIRE restaurant.com. So to get familiar with the food, the concept, what we do. We have some stuff that no one else has, like the potato puff, deep fried mashed potato. We do that. This is our recipe. So it's, yeah, only can be found at Gregoire. And that's why we're the home of the potato puff. We do many other things. We have really branding material like the boxes. We came up with the boxes 21 years ago. That's a stop sign looking box. And we put all our food inside that box. It carries the food really well. It stays hot when it's supposed to be hot, cold when it's supposed to be cold. So just get familiarized with the brand and on that website. And then you can go on my franchise website, which is gfranchise.com. It's easy, G like Gregoire, gfranchise.com. And there you can see the business part of the offering and how we would run the franchise and what type of people, what type of market, where we're looking for. We use a lot of technology, so you can get familiarized with the technology we use too, because let's be real, you know, I don't want people to experience what I have experienced when I opened Gregoire. So I try to really simplify the you know, the pain point of the business. Like I took the preparation out of the equation. You know, there's a lot of other things. I like accounting. As I said earlier, I hate accounting. So I'm automatize the accounting part of it. So they don't have to, and other things, of course, but basically, or they can call my cell phone because I'm always here to answer questions, or and it's 510-455-0494 anytime.
Wow. I can give my email a chef too. Accessible to the people. Yeah. We've never had someone give their cell phone number out before.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, franchise starts with support and communication. So if you're not willing to get a phone call at midnight because, you know, something, then you're not supposed to be in that business. Or you have someone else answering the phone for you, or but you need to be able to be, you know, reached. Period.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time, Chef. We really appreciate it. And thanks to all of our listeners out there. Stay tuned for more.